This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. Coming up on this holiday to commemorate civil rights and the life of Martin Luther King, we're going to actually take a look back at this week's forum that was pretty amazing, because it's the first time, or the second time actually, I can see that that the Chancellor lost control of the crowd. The last time was when he faced a critical faculty senate, which grilled him on why he was not hiring Erwin Chemerinsky initially to be the founding law school dean at UC Irvine. He, of course, later on did hire him back. But this is the second time then where he has faced a critical audience at a meeting he actually, this protesters organized that he agreed to go to, and all but one of the questions were critical of him. And so we're going to air you that forum and give you a chance to see, to hear, actually, to hear him in action. So we'll be doing that momentarily. This is KCI. The opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of the Regents of the University of California, nor the management of KUCI.
I'm very happy that you've all come out tonight to participate in this public forum on the budget crisis and its impact at UCI. Our impetus for having this event was to provide a public space where students can voice their questions, their concerns, and their discontent about the decisions that have been implemented in response to the budget crisis. And we're very happy that this forum is taking place and that undergraduate and graduate students came together to make this event happen, because it's actually been a very difficult and long road to get this public forum to actually take place.
Just a brief background on how everything came to be. As we all know, the increase in privatization of public education due to the cut in state funds towards higher education had led the UC Regents to vote on a 32% increase in our student fees throughout the UC campuses on November 19th at UCLA. The UC Regents' decision was met by frustration and discontent by several hundreds, if not thousands, of students from all around the UC campuses gathered at UCLA to express their frustrations. As a result, and in solidarity, the next week at UCI, hundreds of students rallied once again to express their frustration and discontent with the decision. Out of that rally came a student coalition group whose main purpose and focus has been to advocate for student issues and student rights that haven't been really talked about. A lot of hard work went into planning this event, and due to the enthusiasm of the campus and the excitement of the campus and the diligent work, we're able to put this forum together tonight to talk about these student issues.
So one of the things that we're hoping will come out of this is that all of you will have an opportunity to discuss what the situation is that we're facing, both at the state level. We're being told continuously that our attention should be directed towards Sacramento, that that's where the problem is. But many of us feel that there's also a problem at the top level management of the UCs, including administration here at UCI. So tonight is an opportunity to ask your questions specifically of our administrators here, and to ask broader questions about the problems that we're facing. So I want to just explain the format so that we're clear on how this event is going to take place. The Chancellor will open with a 10-minute presentation on the broad issue of the budget crisis impact at UCI. The remaining time after the 10-minute presentation will be devoted to Q&A. We've set up to assure that all of you get an opportunity, or as many of you as possible get an opportunity to ask your question. We do have some time limitations. Those of you that come up to ask a question, and there'll be two mics at the end of each aisle here, you'll just line up and we'll alternate. Those asking the questions will have 1 minute to ask your question. And I believe there was index cards passed out in case you wanted to write your question beforehand so that when you come up to the mic, you have the question thought out and written out in order to be able to ask it within a limited time frame. Then the chancellor or other administrators will have an opportunity to respond or answer the question, and they will have 3 minutes to answer the question. And we're going to ask both our administrators and, of course, the audience to try to abide by the time limit, because we do only have an hour and we want to make sure that as many questions as possible get asked. Okay, and then Joe and I will come back at the end and we'll have some concluding remarks. But now I'm going to turn it over to our timekeeper / moderator, who's going to run the show from now.
So again, thank you everyone for being here today. Hopefully we'll be able to, you know, have a successful dialogue about what's going on. And again, to echo what Dennis was saying, let's please be mindful of the time. If you can, please, if everybody got cards, write your question on the card so we can get concise, a concise question. And then, and to the admin too, if you can be mindful of the time and be concise in your responses and answers, that would be very helpful to maximize the time that we do have. So now we're just going to move on to opening remarks by Chancellor Drake.
Thanks very much. Very nice to see everyone here, and very pleased that you could all join us. We have had a couple of dozen forums on the campus during this past year to talk about various aspects of the university and how we were dealing with the budgetary circumstances that our campus, our university, and our state find facing us. And this one is particularly good because it features students and focuses on student issues. And we're very interested in hearing from you directly and in giving you a chance to have your questions addressed. I will say, the room, I know we're limited to an hour in the room because someone's using the room after us. But this is not the only time in which we can meet together and address questions, etc. So, you know, if it turns out that as we go through the evening there are questions that are remaining, and I imagine there will be, or other things that you wish to address, then that's the daily work that we do, and we'll talk about ways that you might have those things addressed, because that's a part of our moving forward. I think that we have a tremendous opportunity, and your being here really helps in us as we address this tremendous opportunity. And the opportunity is to make real and lasting contribution to the debate as it goes forward, to make a real difference in the future of our university. We've been under siege for some time, particularly this last budget cycle. I spoke with some alarm and urgency at the Regents' meeting in July, and then again at the Regents' meeting in September, of the hardships that we were enduring and the risk of real and lasting damage to the university that could result from this year's budget cuts. Recent developments, I would say, though very nicely, have given us some hope, and I believe that at least in some areas our message has been heard. We have very strong support illustrated this week from the governor, and this is a tremendous step in the right direction. The governor's January budget was released just the day before yesterday. We now have a critical task, though, and that critical task is making sure that the legislature is fully informed. We need to make sure that our representatives have the information that they need to protect the university as they deliberate the budget this spring. The time for that advocacy is now, and I really ask for you to collaborate with us so that we can make a difference. Many of you have engaged in these activities already. I know that I see several people in the audience who worked with us on the letter writing campaign in December. I think those letters were received and that message was heard, and I think that helped the favorable treatment that we have in the budget, we in higher education in California. But there's much more to do between now and June. For tonight's discussion, I'm joined by several of my colleagues from the university leadership. We're all here to give you information that we hope will serve you as you work in support of the university. I'll speak briefly and address a few questions, and then we will open the forum for questions that come from the audience. We hope, as I mentioned, to have a continuing series of forums and dialogues where we can address and discuss and begin working on building a collaborative consensus so we can move together toward issue resolution. And I can assure you that everyone in university leadership is committed to the exchange of ideas between you, who are our trust holders, those that we serve, and between all segments of the university family. We're approaching tonight as a listening forum, so we're here to openly and respectfully listen to your points of view and your concerns, and we'll do our best to address those, and we know that you will listen respectfully to us. There are five or six issues that were shared with us as being most important as sort of general themes from the student leaders who worked with us on organizing tonight's event. So let me address those five or six themes, and then we can get to the specific questions. Let me say also that I mentioned that many people from university leadership are here, so as you address questions, some of them may be specific to one or another area, and we wanted to make sure there's someone here to be able to answer those questions specifically. So one question was about budget transparency and how the budget of the University of California is established. The budget process within the UC system is multi-layered. The budget is built at the office of the president each year, very active efforts over the summer, with extensive input from the campuses. It's discussed publicly September and then November regents meetings. The regents have an open public discussion and then vote on the budget at the November meeting. The governor releases a preliminary state budget, which includes the proposed UC allocation in January. And this is discussed and debated through May when the governor's so-called May revise is released. And then the governor's May revise goes to the sort of the leaders of the House, of the Assembly and the Senate and the governor. They meet together, they come up with a budget compromise, and that's the budget that the Assembly votes on by statute before the end of June. In fact, sometimes not that soon. But the Assembly then votes on the budget, and the budget is passed. That budget then has the UC budget in it. It's very specific, it's very detailed, it's very long, it's all a public document. That money goes to the office of the president, and then by formula and plan, the money is distributed to the campuses, and then at the campus through the strategic plan and the budget work group and the daily activities of many of the people here, distributed out to the units, to the schools and programs where your education takes place. We work with the deans and department heads and look for every advantage we possibly can have in the budget process, but just want to make sure that you know that the budgeting process is a daily, every day of the year activity for many people in their full-time jobs. Talking about fees, a couple of things. This year, 15%, as you know, mid-year, 15% coming next fall. So there were increases that the regents reluctantly voted for. I know that you've heard the language that they used, they said, and we believe that it was the most difficult vote that they had to take. But one of the things that I think is important and I want to make sure that everyone knows is that in addition to this change, there was also a raising of the eligibility for the Blue and Gold Opportunity Plan. Can I just ask, how many of you know the Blue and Gold Opportunity Plan well? Just hands up. So that's about half the audience. Let me just say a quick word about it, just for those who didn't raise their hands. So the Blue and Gold Opportunity Plan states very simply that if your income this year is $60,000, next year $70,000, if you're from a family that has $70,000 annual income, that you pay no system-wide education or reg fee, that the fees for families that earn under $70,000 a year are covered entirely by grants and aid from the state, from the federal government, and from the university. The median income for California families is about $62,000, $63,000 at this point in time. So by having a Blue and Gold Opportunity Program that's at $70,000, meaning all families with less than $70,000 income pay no system-wide tuition or education registration fees, it means that most California families qualify for full tuition relief at the University of California. And we're very proud of that fact. Second thing with the Blue and Gold Opportunity Plan and other plans we have is that if your family has income up to $120,000, then the fee increase, the impact of the fee increase will be reduced to, or the maximum fee increase will be half the total increase that was passed by the region. So you'll be limited to half the increase if you're under 120, no increase if you're under 70 because you will pay no fees. And then that tapers down to $180,000, so there's partial remission all the way up to $180,000, and only if the income is over $180,000 does the full impact hit. So, and that's about 7% of California families. So I will say that a big effort was made understanding that college is expensive. And the college expenses are a tremendous burden on many families, as they have been, of course, for generations. It's very important in a public research university, a public university, to maintain access and affordability. And that's an extremely high principle held by all those in university leadership. So there's every effort to try to make sure that access and affordability are maintained, and we hope to improve that as we move forward. We're speaking about the fees. I think that's an important thing. Another important thing, though, is to remember the value of the education. And what we're here to do is to create the best possible value in education for you. There was some reason that we all came to the University of California, Irvine. And I think we all came because we're committed to the gold standard of higher education. We're very pleased this week that the Princeton Review released a list of the best values in higher education in the country, and UCI was listed as one of those. They listed 50 private, 50 public among the nearly 3,000 institutions, and we were happy to be listed there in Princeton Review. And also Kiplinger, a little bit ago, released a list of the best values in higher education. We ranked 20 on that list. Berkeley was 18, University of Michigan was 19, and we were 20, and we're really happy to be in the upper echelons of the best value education, and that's what we're here to do. We'd like to continue moving up. We'd like to be the very best at that, and working with you, we think we'll have a chance to do that. I'll talk as fast as I can. Okay. I will do our timekeeper is a little extra diligent, so I will, there's really beautiful prose here today, but I will try to roll through it. What I want to say here is that our primary mission, that one of the questions was on the impact of budget cuts on student services. And our primary mission here is to deliver the finest value education for you that we can. That's why we are in higher education. It's what we do all the time. We want to enable, empower, and inspire you to be able to make a difference. We want this to work for you. We understand that it's difficult, and we understand that by working together collaboratively, we can make it better. Okay, let me make this the wrap-up, Diana, and then I'll answer a question. Okay, Anita, you can relax. Breathe deeply. Let me say two other things that I'll answer. There was a question about the impact on diversity efforts. And I've been at my first diversity and outreach activities took place in the spring of 1969, so it's been 40 years. And I'm proud of all the things that have happened since then, but I want you to know that we're not nearly done. There's still a great effort that has to go forward. And we're determined to make sure that we have no impact on diversity, a negative impact on diversity here. In fact, we're committed to increased diversity, as we always have been. I have some other things I want to say, but I can hear Diane breathing on me. So let me just say that we put people first, and you are an incredibly important asset to us. We're here for you. I will finish this piece off, Diane, and I'll read this, and we'll get the questions. I want to encourage, there's something I want to encourage and something I want to say. I want to encourage you to ask your questions tonight, but also participate with us in the process of contacting those people who are the decision makers in Sacramento. That really is where the budget is decided on. We're put on the table with everything else. We have to protect ourselves. If they know that it's important to us that budget is maintained, it's easier for them to have the courage to do that. That's critically important. I also want to say that that we came here because we believe in this gold standard. We believe in the power of the university to advance science, to advance creativity, to advance innovation, to advance our community, and to advance you, our students. We believe in the rights of every member of our community to express their views in the context of our values, particularly respect and civil rights and human rights. We believe in all members of the UC family. And we provide, we'll be tireless in providing you with a future that gives you the best opportunity to change the world and achieve your goals of success. So let's hear your questions and let's start a new era of dialogue. Thanks very much. So happy to have questions, and I'll either address them or address them to the people I think can answer them best.
So are you going to stand up
here? Well, let's hear the question first and see who it's addressed to, and we can take it from there.
Okay, so we're moving to the Q&A section. If you have a question, please line up. I'm just going to point to you this way, point to you that way. You have 1 minute, and I'm very diligent on time. So please stick to 1 minute. And also, again, to admin, if you have a response, let's be as concise as possible. So let's begin. Go ahead.
I just had a question about the teachers' pink slips that they got last year, was it?
Tell me again now.
The pink slip that the teachers got, the lecturers?
Yes.
Is there anything being done now that our student fees have been increased to keep their jobs?
Yes. So the question was about lecturers whose contracts were not renewed. And part of the hardship, many things happened to bridge this budget gap. You know that the budget cut was over $800 million. An unbelievable cut, and everything that we did was to protect the quality of this university that's been built over decades here and over more than a century statewide. And so the sacrifice was a shared sacrifice in many quarters. As you know, all of the faculty and staff took furlough pay cuts. So everyone participated in doing that. We've had a hiring freeze for over a year, and so people were getting compensated less and being required to work more. Many contracts were not renewed, and many of those were lecturer contracts that were not renewed, and what that meant was that faculty had to take on an increased teaching burden. This year, as we go forward, and particularly if we are treated reasonably in Sacramento, the money that comes back will help us to fill some of those gaps and holes that were created, particularly in that central core mission, which is delivering quality education to you. There are other places where we will still continue to work hard. I mean, what Sacramento is proposing is only about 25% of the money that we would have had in a normal budget year, so we still have a great gap to fill. We'll continue to work hard on that, but a big focus of everything that we get is to try to continually put forward the right educational product for you, and that's an area of great focus.
Thank you. This question concerns the humanities department. Why does that department, like humanities, seem to be worse off as a result of the budget cuts?
Yeah, I think we should answer that.
There's a floater mic.
Yes, yeah, so maybe let me have the provost about that specific question, okay?
So, Michael, is this?
Yeah, I think you can talk loud.
Can you hear me? So, I'm Michael Gottschall, the provost. The budget cuts that were distributed on the campus in each of the last 2 years, very harmful, very unfortunate. Academic units received a proportionally smaller share of those budget reductions than support units did. And on average, each school received the same budget reduction. There was about a 1% difference between the schools in terms of the reduction. Yeah, so humanities did not receive a disproportionate.
Great.
Hello.
Hi.
So, as you should be aware, graduate students teach an awful lot of the classes on this campus. They do an awful lot of the discussion sections. They grade the papers. They create the research. They are in the labs every day and every night working hard to make sure that we create new knowledge and that we educate our undergraduates.
Yes.
Your Golden Gold program only applies to undergraduates, while graduate funding is being cut left and right. What are you going to do about that to maintain our graduate student base?
First, let me say that the graduate student contribution to the university is tremendous, and we appreciate that very much. And the provost will address your question.
I actually agree very much with what you said about the grad program. Couldn't agree with more. One thing I would say, however, is the campus has privileged and prioritized graduate support. So in each of the last 2 years, the budget group took the entire graduate program off of the table before the elections were made. And so one thing that we did was protect the graduate program from the budget reductions that the master campus took, as a matter of fact. So, And in part because of many of the things that you just mentioned. This is a research university. It's a university that prides itself on the strength of the graduate program. And graduate school support is fundamentally important. The central campus support for the graduate program today is in excess of $25 million.
I have a follow-up question, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
So, yes, you protected the graduate block, but by raising fees, that meant that there was less money to go around, so the students were cut anyhow. So how are you going to? Just maintaining the graduate block in the face of rising fees does not protect graduate students on this campus. How are you going to address that?
We'll address that. No, we want to be not too, but I'll let you address that as well. That's a good one for you.
We would love to address it because we would love to actually not have a cut from the state. Part of the hardship that the state cut provides is it actually gives us less resources. And so it would be terrific if the state would uncut or provide us with those resources. But each year when there is a fee increase, we add to the remission that we provide to the schools that increase the total fees. So you're right that the graduate block not being cut means when costs go up, expenses go up, it goes less far. And that is that's a true hardship for the graduate block.
I will be sharing some of the hardships. Yeah.
Who's next?
Okay, can we?
Next question.
Thank you.
So on many occasions, including this one, you've advocated for us to write our senators and our legislators and things like that. However, when we were writing you and signing petitions and asking to meet with you in appointments, we were kind of the only ones in Santa Claus. And so I was just wondering, like, in dealing with us as students that are lower income on the power scale, in dealing with us, you were elusive, and once we became more militant and we had protests and rallies and things like that, you finally agreed to come and have this open forum with us. So I was wondering, you know, you're dealing with us, how has that changed your dealing with Sacramento?
So let me just talk about what writing does. What writing does to Sacramento, how that works. What it does is that the people there hear from constituencies of a wide variety all the time. And they need to work with the people they know, need to work with what they know to be able to make decisions, and they have very, very difficult decisions. And, you know, we were talking about the graduate block being protected, but gosh, graduate students cut anyway. And I think something that's really important to remember is that everybody here has been damaged. So there's no one here who's at the position that they wish to be in, or in the position they were in a year ago. It's been damaged all the way around. We can mitigate and we can protect against that damage as much as possible, but the state budget crisis is a real calamity for many, many people. And we understand that, and what we're doing is trying to work through that to protect the value of the education that you receive. So when the people who are your representatives and our representatives are there making those decisions, and they're looking at the University of California, they're looking at roads and highways, they're looking at a wide variety of things California is struggling to meet, they have to make sure that on the table in front of them are our concerns. And I think that's an important thing.
I think that you have proven that letter writing does not work. So why would you continue to encourage us to letter writing?
Letter writing does in fact work. Let me say this.
I asked him, like, what are you going to do? Since we've seen that letter writing doesn't work, so I don't want you to continue letter writing on my behalf. I want you to do something else. And that's what are your actions?
Yes, so I'd like to say a couple things about that. One is that the advocacy that we have in Sacramento, just to be really clear about this, the advocacy that we have in Sacramento has been, in fact, successful. And that advocacy has, we believe, put a very important person in the process for us as the governor. And the governor stated that a higher education would not be cut anymore. That's very, very important. This is not a good forum to talk about. I've been doing this for many, many years, as you know, and have been in Sacramento many, many times and created many, many programs, which we're happy to detail, and continue to do those things. I'll be there, in fact, week after next and do that again. I've met with over 50 legislators. I've testified before both houses of Congress and 25 times before the state legislature. And I will say that those programs have worked quite well, and we're happy to inform you of those. Tonight, what we're here to do is to talk about collaboration between us in helping to protect the educational value for you in the future. And a way that we can do that you can help me to do a better job of protecting the future of your education, is to make sure that the people who represent us there hear from you as well as hearing from me. Thank you.
Also, just due to time, like instead of clapping, we do this thing called snapping. So let's give people some love like this, all right?
Thank you. President Udall's catchphrase is, mediocrity is not an option. And he claims that pay cuts for top-level administrators would send valuable individuals away from the UC system. This is one of the justifications for balancing the budget on the back of students and workers. And since you keep diverting questions to other people in the audience, let me ask you this directly. If your salary gets cut another 10%, will you start looking for another job, or will you live up to the rhetoric of shared sacrifice?
Woo!
I understand that question very well, and this has been unpleasant for everyone, I absolutely admit that. And we're all clear about that. And one of the things that we need to make sure that we do is we need to focus the solution on where the problems are. Because solutions that don't address the problems then don't really move us any further. So what we've done, I'll say, is the first thing we did here is that the senior leadership took a voluntary pay cut before anyone else and then took the largest pay cut. And that's fine. What I want to tell you, though, is because senior management group salaries are about 0.1% of the budget, cutting senior management group salaries is something that allows us to share in the sacrifice and does not solve the problem. Is it true that our salary, that the leadership salaries at the University of California are lower than those in peer institutions across the country? That's absolutely true. And do we struggle every time we have to hire a leader to come and help take us forward? That's absolutely true. We struggle all the time. People don't look at us. And so what we need to do is to really address a problem that will lead to a solution. And the problem that leads to a solution is to make sure that the university is protected in the state budget. That's 1,000 times larger and 1,000 times more important than trimming further the salaries of a few people so they're even further behind the average for the country. Next.
Hello, Thomas. More on what Ryan is asking about. President Udall claims that the media is focused on executive compensation and perks as a diversion from the issue. Isn't discouragement of protests on UC campuses and transfer of all the blame to Sacramento a diversion from valid concerns over the lack of budget transparency and poorly prioritized spending within the UC system?
So what we would hope is that, let me say, we're very much in favor of budget transparency, so I encourage you, I think that's a very important thing, because the more you know about the budget, and the more all of us know about the budget and how it's created, the better we can impact those who are the decision makers on the budget, the regions and the legislature. So a couple things about this. The budget of the university is decided, it comes out in an information item, it's published in an information item in September, it's debated and discussed for 2 months and then voted on in November. So it's a public document for everybody to be able to see. By law, it's public. Second, that goes to the legislature, and that's where the funding decision takes place. And it's critically important, I would just say, that it's critically important that we work with those decision makers who actually vote on how much money there is to support your education and all the other things the university does. It's critical that we concentrate our attention on those people who have those decisions to make. We're all for transparency. I'm totally in favor of it and want that to be the case. But I also want to make sure that this particular crisis, what we're talking about here, this particular crisis is a funding crisis and a deprioritization of the university in Sacramento, and that's the place where we need to focus our energy if we are in fact going to address this particular crisis. I appreciate your question. Thank you.
Well, but what about the discouragement of protests here on campus, the direct actions. I mean, you've had people taking down our signs when they're concerning us. Yeah, police taking down the signs when they have to do with actions on campus.
So I don't know about that. And
we have pictures.
What I just said is so I didn't know about that. And maybe you could say a word about that since we have a policy talk. I don't know about that piece. But let me just say this, just to be clear. We support... The level to which we support free speech at this campus is known around the country. There are... it's absolutely known around the country. I mean, that's something that we're actually proud of. That's something actually that we're proud of, that you have a chance to share your voices and to share your concerns. And that's been a proud tradition. There are people sharing their voices and sharing their concerns routinely on this campus. We're here tonight with you because we want to hear from you. So that's we do that actively. We work hard
truly to protect your ability to speak freely, to learn the things, and to make up your mind. So that's a critical part of what we do. And but the police chief may wish to say something about signs. I don't know about that. So,
you have 1 minute. Sorry.
Right. I'm Paul Hennessy. I'm the police chief here on campus. Let me address your question. I don't specifically know of the circumstances that you're talking about. We do, as a matter of course, work with student affairs and student conduct in terms of removing anything that's posted that would be inappropriate, would be offensive. Now, there would be circumstances that I can't particularly address. However, I will say this, that if you have a specific incident which you have a complaint about or you feel that it was removed inappropriately, we do have a means, and I am more than happy to look into a specific complaint and address those, and if we have a training issue, if we have another aspect that we need to look at in terms of how we do it, I'm more than happy to look at it. This is the first I've heard of this particular
thanks.
So, I'm
going to
ask an officer at the UCLA Regents meeting, why are you wearing a bulletproof vest through the one with the guns? So my question is, do you feel that it is necessary to arm the police department in riot gear while UCR students conduct a peaceful protest?
So maybe that would be Paul as well. Is that fair enough? Yeah.
Let me address it in this manner. There really are two broad categories of protests, demonstrations, events that occur on campus. The first category are those that occur within university regulations. Our role, and as everybody knows here, we've had many controversial events covering the entire spectrum. We've had a number of issues where we've had people that have wanted to protest, perhaps even interrupt those who are doing that presentation, that demonstration that is within the university regulations. We're there to, number one, ensure that they can have their presentation, their demonstration. There are then events that cross that line, that go into where they are violating university policy or violating laws. In that particular circumstance, we are also responsible for taking some degree of action. We have a responsibility for public safety. We have a responsibility for also ensuring that business operations of the university can continue uninterrupted. So one of the things that we have to do is try to find that balance between making sure that we've got safety and security at those events, protest demonstrations that meet with our within university regulations, but also that we can respond appropriately in those circumstances which may cross that line, and that we're still ensuring that public safety exists and that university business operations continue. Thank you.
Leaving Chancellor Drake, I think it's important that we respect Chancellor Drake because he's a mediator, he's the messenger, so we do not want to kill a messenger.
Yeah, certainly don't want to do that.
Yeah, I just want to say I have a lot of respect and he needs to be respected because he's a chancellor. My question is this, as a biological student, a biological science student, a lot of professors right now are facing a lot of turmoil with TAs because we don't have enough funding. We have 300 people per lecture. And so a lot of professors are struggling with even like small things like passing out quizzes per se. I just want to know how that's being addressed because, it's a big strain and a lot of the courses are being completely rearranged. As a biological science major, what concerns me is these are the future doctors of America. I mean, we're going to be taking care, I'm not sure if I'll be a doctor yet, but we're going to be taking care of your health. These are people that need to be, taught efficiently and not, second rate. Yeah. So I just want to know how that's going to be treated.
So I think those are very important points. I mean, I went to medical school, as you know, and those things are very, very important. I remember lessons that I learned then that served me well throughout my career as a clinician and throughout my academic career, that these are critical things. And I've mentioned before, I'll say again, that the gold standard, the quality of your education, is what we're all here to protect. Mm-hmm. It's why we do this as a living. So these particular cuts, the constraints on the university, $70 million, taken out of our university in 1 year. We're not able to conduct business as usual. I was asked to speak before the Regents in July of last year and then asked to speak before them again in September to help convey the message of the harm that these cuts would bring to the University of California. And part of the message that I brought was that harm the University of California, actually, that's okay. But we also are harming the future of people who need to be the future leaders of our state. We harm the state when we do that. We harm the nation. The engine of energy and innovation that has come from the University of California is what has made California great.
And I'd say if you look at the UC of 1940, you saw what turned into the California of 1960. And the UC of 1960 was what turned into the California of 2000. And the UC of today is what's going to be the California of tomorrow. And if we want that California to be the California that we know and love, we have to make sure that we protect its future by protecting its most valuable resource, which is the minds of its young people. So that is the reason this is so important. And some of you have different ideas about who might do what and whatever else. Let me say again that I have spent a tremendous amount of time working with legislators in Sacramento and in Washington, D.C. And I will say that I know many of them well, and they, in hearing from constituents about what's important to them, matters to them. They actually, I mean, I don't want to say anything good about politicians, but they don't want to do a bad job. And when they have real information and understand what's really happening, it helps them to make the right decisions that help us. And moving that needle a little bit helps us a lot. And so for biology, which has been impacted this year, to not be impacted as much next year, the real important thing is collaborative advocacy between now and June, so we can do the most we can to move forward. I see, let me say, light at the end of the tunnel. I see this as light. We're not nearly there. This is a quarter of the cuts being restored, but it moves us in the right direction and puts us in the place where we can go forward, and I think that that's critical. So thanks for your question.
Thank you. I think instead of, there's a lot of anger in the room right now, instead of directing the anger towards Chancellor Gray, I think it would be more productive, just from even my standpoint, to perhaps use that anger and write to your legislators instead of attacking.
Unfortunately, I find your answer is so quiet that I have a heavy or elevated adjective. And a lot of promises of good intentions, but yet I failed to hear anything that you actually answered in the question has been asked to you.
Okay.
But my question is that one of the focal points of the student struggle against the administration's actions was, and it has been long before the budget cut, is the outsourcing, the campaign, the practice that you have of outsourcing labor like custodians and lawnmowers to outside companies. We consider it an unfair practice, and my question to you is, do you consider outsourcing a racist anti-worker labor practice?
No. What I'd say about that is a couple things. The first is that we have a few contracts on edges, but the overwhelming majority of our workers, people working on campus, work for us. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that there is a very active process of negotiation that goes on in collective bargaining in other areas. I can't actually address those things in a forum that is not a collective bargaining forum. So those questions are, happy to have those questions answered. That's not the kind of thing that we can answer here tonight. I will say, though, that we have no, when we provide services, the reason we provide services is to create educational value for you. What we care about is providing quality services so you can have a quality education. And that's all we actually think about. That's actually all we think about.
Thank you.
All right, question for Chancellor Drake. Okay, so despite the fact that the students and workers of the university have played absolutely no role in the appointment of the majority of the UC regents, why are they forced to suffer from the decisions made by this clearly undemocratic and unaccountable governing body?
The regents are appointed. The regental appointment process is one that's done with a nomination through the governor and approval by the Senate and Assembly. Okay, so they're approved by the people in the decision makers in Sacramento that we've been talking about tonight. So there's a way to impact that process throughout by working with the legislature according to the Constitution of the state. And the regents' meetings are public, and all the regents' deliberations are public. And let me say that people are invited.
Oh, can I make a point?
Sure.
The UC Regent meeting at UCLA was not public. In fact, the police were brutalizing students.
Let me say that I go to the regents' meetings. I go to all the regents' meetings, and they are by law public. And here's how that happens. There's room inside. The room is only a certain type, but there's room inside where people come to the meetings. And let me say the public attend every meeting. and also the meetings are broadcast. So all of that information is public by law. It's controlled by the law and by the Constitution. The people who determine this are those who govern the state. And all I can say to citizens who feel discontent with the way the government works, the way that you do that is by involving yourself with the governing process and working to change it. And that's what I would I'd suggest. I mean, that's the regent of the university are the body that has been constituted to direct this university since its origin. It has risen to be the highest ranking and most celebrated public university in the world. That's great. If there are ways that they ought to do things different, you contact the regents directly and you work with the state government leaders on that. And that's the public process that's set up to do this.
Thank you, Chancellor Drake. We appreciate the opportunity, this rare opportunity to voice our concerns and our questions to you.
Yeah.
So I was at the UCLA protest, and Justine kind of touched on this earlier, but I saw many students being tased and beaten, even though we didn't have any kinds of weapons. And so I don't know if this is true, so please you can correct me, but I heard that when police officers are using excessive force, other police officers kind of like pull them back, and there are clips of other officers pulling other officers back. So I was just wondering, even though you didn't make the decisions to, this was at UCLA, so you didn't necessarily make these decisions of the police, but did you feel that the reaction from the UCPD was truly necessary?
You're asking me to comment on events that I was not present at, and I wanted to say.
We just want to know if you felt that the reactions of UCPD to students that go to UCI, that go to other campuses, if that action was warranted. Because you know the chancellor, so we just want to know how I feel, how our administration feels about what can happen.
So let me make sure I answer the question appropriately. I mean, it's a complicated question. So, well, let me say there are two pieces here. So one is about what do we feel about, let me say it's something about campus police. And I work closely with the police chief and with campus police on a routine basis. We have things that come up on a routine basis that have to do with protecting you and the rest of the people on the campus. And I will say that we have an outstanding force of people who do everything they can to protect all of us here on the campus. You know, we've talked about this, that we've had violence on the campus that was quite severe. And these people put themselves at risk to protect us, and we appreciate that. In the circumstance at UCLA where I wasn't, or other places that I've not been, I think they're very difficult decisions that are made. And what happens after those decisions is that people review the circumstances to determine if they were appropriate. And I believe that that's underway now. And so what you're asking me is I don't have any specific knowledge of what happened. And I think that a review is taking place now to make sure things are okay. I will say this. I went to school in the 60s. As did some of the other old students here with me. And we were witnessed directly, and I was tear gassed and everything else, like most of the people my colleagues were at the time, and we saw police brutality. We saw people being out of whack and out of range, and it was terrible and inappropriate. And I'll say there have been dramatic improvements since then. I don't know that we're all the way near where we need to be, but I know that we're very, very cognizant of making sure that the police that are here to protect all of us, do their very best to protect us, and that we assist them in doing a good job of that. Let me have the chief say a word.
I would appreciate a comment.
Yeah, just the chief can say a word.
You have 1 minute.
Okay.
Good. Let me say this. There was a lot of emotions that were present at UCLA. Anytime that you have an event where you have that potential for damage, injury, that there are responsibilities for officers on the scene to try to protect that. I will say that not every decision is going to be made with 100% perfect accuracy. Everybody in this room is human, every police officer is human. I cannot specifically address what you're saying because I did not witness those events. Now, in terms of heard lots of stories about tasering and beatings. However, having heard from officers on the scene, it certainly wasn't that to that degree or that extent. Allow me to finish.
Without your hand, I can show you the images. of that, and Brooks?
Simply put, we're not going to resolve this question tonight. There's none of us that can answer your question. We can't address the fact whether things were done correctly or incorrectly. I do know that there's a review going on, just like there's a review that's going on up in Berkeley and Davis. And that's the best that I can address in terms of answering your question at this point.
Thank you. So we only have a few minutes left, so.
Quick. Chancellor Drake, I don't think this is working, but I'll just ask you. We've had a lot of, I've heard a lot of like double political talk, double talk, and so I'm just going to ask you a question, man to man, about your philosophy. What is the difference between a private and a public university, and do you feel that the actions to raise fees 32% is an action that privatizes the University of California or makes it public and accessible to every student sitting here tonight?
So I would say that, as you know, I've been at this university, as I mentioned, I've been here for 38 years. And this is the most difficult time we've faced. And I will say that through those 38 years, I'm proud of the work that I and my colleagues have done to keep this university affordable and to make it accessible to people, particularly those who don't have the haven't had access to high-quality education in the past. I've had a career of doing that. In fact, I would stand with anyone on having done that. It's what I do. And so I think that raising fees is an awful solution to a problem. It's a horrible solution. The best fees, I loved it, up through the early 90s when the fees were nearly nothing. And then the great mantra was best quality education, best opportunity, best quality healthcare services, best thought and innovation, and wide open to the people of California. I thought that was the smartest thing this state ever did. When the fees started going up, I said, this is bad policy. It's bad for us. What we want to do is create as much access as possible for the young minds of California to come and be educated. So my idea of the best fees would be no fees. I think that the lower fees can be, the better. And anything we can do to create access, I think, is better. So that's my philosophy. I've actually fought for that, and I'm proud and pleased of the things we've been able to achieve. I think, just to make sure you have the truth about this, that many regents would never have believed that they would vote for a fee increase. I know some of them well, and they would say, the thing that I care about on this board is to make sure the fees stay as low as possible. One particular regent I know said he knew he would finish his 12 years without ever voting for a fee increase, and he voted for this increase because what he saw was that the permanent damage to the institution that was at risk, unless we could bridge this together, was something he didn't think that we could recover from. What we hope is that the fees will be as low as possible and the university will be as affordable as possible. And we're working, my colleagues here in the room, I'll tell you, are working every day in ways that we can help to bring other sources of revenue to the institution, because we want to continue to protect the quality of your education while making this university as affordable and accessible as possible. Thank you. Yes, Manuel.
I just want to say something very briefly, since regarding the definition of a public university has been...
My name is Manuel Gomez, Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs. I want to just make two quick points regarding a public university, which I and everyone I think here in this room wants to protect and sustain for the future. There's a disinclination, there's almost a sort of a disbelief about riding to Sacramento or going to Sacramento or dealing with Sacramento. The definition of a public university, it is funded by the people of California. That happens in Sacramento. That's one of the definitions of a public university. A private university gets its money from the parents or of the rich students that attend it. In addition, so that's very important regarding the decision making of funding. It happens in Sacramento for public universities. And I want to defend the public university as you do. And I want to say one other thing about it. We get $51 million on this campus alone in Cal grants. That's public tax money of the people of California, voted on by the legislature and the governor, coming to our students. And we give out $378 million a year in some form of financial aid. And 70% of our students enrolled here at UCI are on some form of financial aid. This is important. That's the truth. This is important to understand about what a public university is. And if we don't influence the legislature to prioritize funding, then they can keep on funding prisons, which receive more money than higher ed.
I'm sorry, really have to stop you.
I'm sorry, I just wanted to say that since you went man to man, I like to go man to man too. It is our university, mind you.
Okay, this may be the last question.
I think we'll have to make this the last one.
Okay, this is the last question. Go ahead.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for the book. I appreciate it. More than from last name, the name,
I just want you to stand back from the microphone a little bit. I couldn't hear. Just back up, 6 inches.
Okay.
Great, perfect. Okay. Okay, yes.
Durante 20 años, la universidad ha sufrido grandes cambios.
In the last 20 years, we've seen a number of changes here at the university.
Grandes edificios.
Yeah.
We've seen a number of new buildings go up.
Good classroom.
Thank you.
more better opportunities for the students and for teachers.
Yeah.
For more better working for administration for the university. Okay?
Yeah.
My question is, for 20 years, my husband is working here, all right? For 20 years, my husband working here, okay? My question is, ¿es el tiempo que como persona y esposa de un trabajador?
I believe it's time as the wife of a worker here on campus.
Se nos dé la misma oportunidad.
That we receive the same opportunities.
De respeto.
The same respect.
Dignidad.
The same dignity.
Trabajamos.
We work.
Limpiamos.
We clean.
Es tiempo.
It's time.
De que las familias.
That the family.
Y nuestros hijos.
And our children.
Tenga la misma oportunidad que su familia tiene para usted.
Have the same opportunity as your family. The main question is, don't you think that the exploitative conditions that are created by the practice of outsourcing on this campus go fundamentally against the core values that your office says it promotes? Isn't it time that ABM custodians, that the same 150 workers that are currently working on this campus, some who have been working for 20 years, that they be insourced, that they be respected, and that they be given the dignity of being UCI employees along with the same benefits, the same wages, and the opportunities that other families from other workers on this campus have?
I say one thing, just Diana, I'll be real fast. Okay, really fast. So the really fast thing is that what we want to do is to have this be the beginning of dialogue and to engage. And so to the extent that you have questions that have come that we haven't been able to address, etc., we're happy to share that information and to share that dialogue with you. This is not one to make everybody agree or feel the same way at the end of the day. But we want to make sure that there's a chance to exchange information. This is a university, and we appreciate this. So I want to thank you. I know we have to be done by 6 o'clock, but I want to thank you all for coming out and look forward to the future. Thank you very much.
Well, guys, I think I've lost my other moderator for the evening. But I just, again, I want to, along with the chancellor, thank all of you for coming out tonight and participating in this event. It should be clear that this forum isn't going to provide a solution to the challenges that we're all facing as students and workers on this campus, and that this is one opportunity to educate ourselves on what is actually happening on our campus, what are the decisions that are being made that are impacting us primarily. So I urge you all to stay involved. I'm very happy that you came out and asked the tough questions. I think it's important that we continue to ask the tough questions of our state representatives and of our administrators. They're highly paid. They should be able to answer and to take the tough questions. So I appreciate that you came out and you asked the tough questions. And I ask all of you to stay informed and to stay involved. And one way that you can stay involved is that tomorrow you can participate in supporting the 150 custodians that are still outsourced on our campus. They will be participating in a rally at the flagpoles at 2:30. Please join them. Please come out and show your support, because part of the issue that we're facing as students is that we're being asked to bail out the state, we're being asked to bail out the university, and workers, these outsourced workers and the other workers that are being furloughed and laid off on our campuses, they're being asked to bail out the university. And it's time that we say in a united voice, no, enough is enough. Where's our bailout? We need to stand together and fight for that. So come out tomorrow at 2:30 and support the workers.
Are you guys going to drop the charges against John Bruning?
Not up to us. It'll be going to the district attorney's office.
So they haven't decided yet?
No.
Because, I was just thinking, in Berkeley, the people that were arrested for breaking windows, supposedly, windows were broken there, and then there were no more charges. There was no window broken, right?
No, but there were behaviors that needed to be addressed. And the fact of the matter, this will be going through due process. It'll be going up to the district attorney's office. They'll be making the decision on it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
That was actually, we ended with a little quote from the police chief saying that it was up to the DA to drop or continue the charge to prosecute John Bruning, the sociology graduate student. And the rally was actually the next day after the forum, which was last Thursday already, on the workers. This is Dan Zhang signing off for Subversity here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.